Sahanavavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Very good. Each morning we meet for meditation, we use a different topic to introduce the meditation. I realize there's a favorite topic of mine that we haven't taken up here for such a long time. A long time means several years, I think. So we'll use this topic to introduce today's meditation. Today's meditation will be on Shanti, on peace. A nice way to introduce this topic is with an anecdote, a cute story. When I was teaching some children, I asked a group of children, when we finished a prayer, why do we conclude with Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti Hi? I ask them, why three times Shanti? Good question. Can you answer that? Many of you can. If you can't answer, it shows that there's something about Shanti that we don't understand. Shanti is such a common word, but do you really understand it? The children were so confused. One child said, oh, Swamiji, we pray Shanti three times so that we can have three times as much peace. But I explained to the child, if that's true, why stop at three? I asked him, why not chant it 33 times? Why not 333 times? So there's a specific reason for three times, which we'll talk about in a few moments. That reason becomes very clear when we really understand the meaning of Shanti. And I'll start off with a very provocative statement. Bhagavan cannot give you Shanti. Is that provocative enough? It's a fact. Bhagavan cannot give you Shanti because Bhagavan cannot give you what he's already given you. You already have Shanti. See, this is what's not understood. You already are the possessor of vast peace, joy, happiness, contentment. It lies within, as you all know, as what you've all heard many, many times. Your true nature, Atma Swarupa, happens to be Shanti Swarupa. What can you do? You're already that, to use my guru's terms. You already have what you want to possess. You already are what you want to become. And the problem is we fail to recognize what we already have. And here's a good way to understand this properly is to go deeply into the meaning of the word Shanti. Most of you know that all of our Sanskrit vocabulary are derived from a number of dhatus, Sanskrit verbal roots. There are 2,200 of them in total. And Shanti comes from a specific root, one of those 2,200, called Sham. And Sham is a root, Shamnoti, Shamati is a verb form. It's the same root that we use to say to sleep. To sleep? Yes. Because the root sham, we can translate it as peace, which is fine, but if you wanted to be very literal about the meaning, you should translate it as quietude or even silence. Huh. A very literal translation of Shanti would be quietude or silence. And what's significant about that is silence is not the presence of something, it's the absence of something, correct? When you say, I want some peace and quiet, I want some silence, it's not a matter of what you want to get, it's what you have to get rid of. If some of you have children at home and you want some peace and quiet, you know as long as those kids are running around, you're not going to enjoy any peace and quiet until the children leave. By the way, many of you have experienced that as your kids go off to college. Isn't it nice? I know you miss your kid. Definitely you miss him. But then it becomes so nice and quiet at home, especially if they were in the habit of playing music very loudly, and then suddenly, So, silence isn't what you get. It's what remains when sources of noise are removed. This is why, we said before, Bhagavan cannot give you shanti. Bhagavan can help remove the obstacles to shanti. Pardon my sarcasm. He makes your children grow up and leave home. And we're going to have some shanti at home. So, he can't give you what you already have. Shanti is the quiet that remains in the absence of all the problems and obstacles to shanti. Let's explore this just a little bit further. When the mind stops, what remains? Conventionally, we think we have to do something to get shanti. Isn't it ulta? It's when we stop doing that we enjoy shanti. Thinking cannot produce quiet. Work cannot produce peace. Activity cannot produce contentment. Is this Vedantic enough for you? Activity cannot produce contentment. This is what the ancient rishis said. And they said so because they understood vividly that your true nature already is Satchit Ananda. Let's come back to that Om Shanti, 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 just to finish off that anecdote that we opened with. Do you think we're able now to answer the question, why Shanti three times? If Shanti is not something positive, it's not a thing, it's not a vastu in Sanskrit, or a cheese, as some of you would say. It's not a thing, it's what remains in the absence. So therefore, when we're praying for Shanti, we're not praying to get something, but we're praying for something to go away. Specifically, if we pray Shanti three times, we're praying for three different things to go away. Adhipautika, adhidaivika, adhyatmika, dukkha. Three kinds of suffering. One kind of suffering is caused by you and me and all the people in the world. We're pretty good at it, aren't we? So one source of suffering is suffering caused by humankind. We pray Shanti once for that to go away. Second kind of problem or obstacle to Shanti is a problem not caused by people. It's a problem inherent in nature, like the terrible earthquake that just shook in China and so many other natural disasters which happen regularly. So these natural disasters are another source of suffering, clearly not the result of human activity. It's a second category, adhidaivika. So therefore, we pray Shanti a second time for removal of causes of suffering caused by other than human beings, which means caused by nature. And the third source of suffering, and arguably the primary source of our own suffering, is not other people and is not nature. The primary source of our own suffering is ourselves. And that's the third category. The kinds of suffering that we ourselves cause for ourselves. So, for the sake of the removal of these three sources of suffering, therefore we pray Shanti three times. Now, in terms of meditation, there's something very profound in this observation. The observation is, when you sit to meditate, if you have gained some modest skill at meditation, you can make your mind a little bit more quiet, then a little bit more quiet, then a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. Have you noticed that as your mind becomes more and more quiet, let me put it in a question. As your mind becomes more and more quiet, do you become, oh, I feel so empty. I feel so alone. I feel so nothing. Is that how you feel? Or, as your mind becomes more and more quiet, do you feel like you're more peaceful? Do you feel like you're more content? Do you feel like you are actually approaching something you seek? Isn't that odd? You would think that as your mind becomes more and more quiet, you'd have the sense of growing emptiness. You don't experience it. I don't experience it. No one experiences it, because when your mind is quiet, what remains is not emptiness, but rather fullness, purnata, completeness, contentment. This is Satchidananda Atma. This is your true nature as a source of contentment and peace. If not for that fact, you would think that making your mind quiet would leave you in a state of emptiness, void. Several of our experiences lead us to the opposite conclusion. Another good example is your experience of deep sleep. I've given this example before. Deep sleep is a condition which is, to put it bluntly, deep sleep is indistinguishable from being dead. When you are in a condition of dreamless sleep, that experience cannot be distinguished from the experience of being dead. Now, I'm assuming not too many of you are anxious for the experience of being dead, but it's significant that we all love a good night's sleep. How amazing is that? So in that condition of dreamless sleep, which is indistinguishable from being dead, it's a condition of perfect peace, contentment. We love it. Do you feel like you're in this dark, vast void, scary darkness and nothingness surrounding you? We don't feel that in deep sleep. It's such a blessed condition of peace, of contentment, of fullness. What do you think of death now? Same. This is not our topic for today, but since we've touched upon this, the condition of being dead is that same blessed experience of absolute peace, exactly as you experience every night in dreamless sleep. It's a condition in which the last impediments to peace have been removed. Of course, one impediment to peace is our bodies. Do you think your body is ever going to be free from problems? Therefore, your body is always going to be a source of suffering. That's the third shanti for adhyatmika dukkha, the kinds of suffering caused by our own selves, our own bodies and minds, etc. So giving up the body is a one way of gaining that total peace. How about in meditation? In meditation, we do sort of give up our bodies, do we not? In meditation, you sit down comfortably so that your body doesn't pain you. You close your eyes so that you're not seeing your body or seeing anything around you. And you turn your attention within, away from your body. Just as when you fall asleep, we lose track of our bodies. Our bodies go away from our experience, in the same way in meditation. Body goes away. Then, as meditation grows deeper, thoughts start to, can we say, thin out. At first, it's a very thick, dense tangle of thoughts. When you begin a meditation, after some time, that tangle becomes a little bit less complicated, and the strands become fewer and fewer and fewer. As we become more and more quiet, as we become more and more shanta, quiet, peaceful. And you can imagine then that as the thoughts become fewer and fewer and fewer, you will find yourself experientially approaching that condition of perfect peace, perfect contentment within. Now, one more topic before we begin our meditation, and there's a trick here. Suppose someone says, but Swamiji, I almost never can make my mind quiet. When I meditate, it just keeps going, it keeps going. Sometimes it becomes a little bit more quiet, but Swamiji, my mind really never stops.
Okay.
That's not uncommon. Let's introduce a question. Is it necessary to remove every last thought for the sake of experiencing peace? Is it necessary to remove every last thought to experience peace? There's a trick question here. There's a trick going on. We said peace, shanti, is atma sarupa. It's what remains when everything else is removed. Doesn't it mean that it's also present when everything else is there? Absolutely. Is it that thoughts come and Satchidananda Atma gets kicked out? Silly, right? Atma is you, your true nature. You persist even in the presence of thoughts. You persist through the three states, jagrat, swapna, sushupti, through waking state, through deep sleep, through dream state. You are present as Satchidananda Atma no matter what. So if we understand Satchidatma to be the source of ananda, to be the source of shanti, to be the source of peace, and it's always present, then tell me, is that peace not present now? It is present now. Is it less present now than in meditation and deep sleep, or equally present now as compared to meditation and deep sleep? From an existential standpoint, equally. Experientially, we'll talk about in a moment. That's another issue. But in terms of existence, that source of shanti is as present now as it can be. It's as present now as it will be in deep sleep, as it is in any condition, as it will be when you're enlightened, as it will be when you're dead. That source of shanti is already present existentially in terms of existence, but not necessarily in terms of experience. So, in terms of your experience, that sense of contentment seems to be held away from you because of the activity of the mind. Suppose in meditation this morning, which we'll begin in a few moments, suppose in meditation we can make your mind not silent, but somewhat more quiet. Just remove some of the thoughts and get a little bit more quiet, a little bit more quiet. When your mind becomes somewhat quiet, it's not very hard to appreciate that even when your thoughts are going, even then, shanti is present. There was an image that I wrote a poem about decades ago when I was a young student. And the poem had to do with leaves laying on the surface of a pond. Imagine a calm pond, not a ripple in the pond. That ripple-free pond represents a condition of total peace and contentment. So that pond could be absolutely quiet, not a ripple on the pond. That represents a condition of perfect meditation when your mind is absolutely silent, or a condition of deep sleep, even a condition of death when that pond is absolutely silent. Now, imagine a leaf floating on the pond. Does that leaf create any ripples? It's just floating there. Suppose three leaves are floating there, but no ripples. They're just floating on the surface. Those leaves represent your thoughts. Usually, we envision thoughts as ripples passing through the pond of our minds. That's a conventional way of understanding it, and it's also plenty of scriptural references to that metaphor. Ripples of, like, in Sanskrit we call them vrittis. Vritti is something that moves or changes. But you can also envision thoughts not as ripples on the pond, but rather as leaves laying still on the surface of the pond. If you can appreciate your thoughts to be like so many leaves floating on the surface of a pond, then you can appreciate that your silence is uninterrupted even by thoughts. And that's a remarkable statement. Your silence is uninterrupted even by thoughts. We think it's interrupted. And we think it's interrupted because we're so caught up with this whole mental process, with this mental machine. But if we re-envision this mental machine, if we take a different perspective on our own minds, we can see that even in the presence of thoughts, silence remains. Even in the presence of thoughts, shanti remains. And from just 1 minute of Vedanta here, just to show that we're not making this up, this is pure Vedanta, Dvaita Vedanta, which teaches that your nature as Satchidananda Atma is utterly unaffected by the contents of your mind. If you've attended our Vedanta classes here, you've heard that teaching, you've understood that teaching. Your consciousness, Chaitanya Atma, is utterly unaffected by whatever happens in your mind. Therefore, that metaphor of leaves floating on the surface of the pond is an absolutely valid metaphor. However, it's hard to appreciate all that when you're in a pond thrashing about like a drowning crazy person. So what we do in meditation is we just create a situation in which you can experience some quiet. That's it. In that quiet, you have an opportunity to do several things. You have an opportunity to find out, is it true? In fact, this is your assignment for the meditation to come. As we meditate, find out, as your mind becomes more quiet, do you feel like you're plunging into emptiness or into fullness as your mind becomes more quiet? And as your mind becomes more quiet, see if you can find out, does that peace really leave when thoughts come? Or does that peace remain in the presence of thoughts, mental activity? You can discover that. This is a little bit tricky, but it can be discovered. When your mind becomes, and here's how you might be able to discover it. When your mind becomes really, really quiet and silent, then you just appreciate the silence, the peace, the contentment. Then, when one or two thoughts, not a flood of thoughts, but just one or two thoughts come, then you might be able to observe that even in the presence of those thoughts, your peace remains undisturbed. This is shanti. And since this has been kind of nice timing that we had the nice shanti mantras that we recited here for our Vedic chanting before, and it would be nice for our meditation to take up that same shanti mantra. The mantra, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. This is a important mantra. We'll take that up for chanting. By the way, there's something about pronunciation of that mantra which you might not be aware of. The mantra, Om Shantihi, Shantihi, Shantihi. But when you have this Visarga preceding a shakara, the letter sha, the pronunciation of that Visarga becomes like the following letter. So the pronunciation, if you're pronouncing Vedic Sanskrit properly, the correct pronunciation is not Om Shantihi, 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 but rather Om Shantish, Shantish, Shantihi, because there's nothing at the end, right? So you have to pronounce the full, the ihi, this final syllable has to be pronounced ihi correctly. And but then Om Shantish, Shantish, the two SHs coalesce. So the final pronunciation then simply is Om Shantish, Shantish, Shantihi. This is the correct Vedic pronunciation.